Hello and welcome to the Chengdu Gaming Federation podcast. My name is Charlie and I'm joined again with Austin.
What up?
Nice. Good way to introduce yourself. Today we're talking about gaming platforms. This is one we've been talking about recording for a couple months now, especially with news of Tencent's Wii game distribution platform.
Yeah, and a potential closing, I guess, of Steam in China.
Blocking, banning Steam.
Yeah, I mean, like, what was it? Maybe a few weeks ago now? Last month, I guess, that Steam community was blocked.
Blocked in China. Yeah. That's right. And now that's been a major bummer because there are some features in Steam which just do not seem to be working without a VPN. One of those is I see that other, like if you're playing a game on Steam and it pops up and says Austin's playing this, if I try to see like, you know, what you're playing or how many hours, it won't load that.
Right.
If you're trying to view friend information,
like achievements or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. Achievements is a big one too. Yeah. Basically, a lot of the social functionality of Steam now is broken inside China, and this
now,
is a big bummer.
How much do you typically find that you use a lot of the Steam community features? Because I found more recently I started to use it more, but right. For the predominant lifespan of Steam, I've basically steered away from the majority of that, including things like trading cards and achievements and
Use it quite a lot. I mean, actually, I think that this event of the community store, the community site being blocked has really made me aware of how much I use it.
Right.
The truth is that I use it a lot. Yeah. I particularly like the activity feed.
Yeah, that's cool. That can show you like what games your friends have purchased, what's if they've done achievements recently, what they're playing.
Exactly.
It also shows, I think, news for games in your library and things like that. Updates.
For games that you follow.
Yeah.
Specifically, yeah. And it really sucks to have that blocked. But one of the bigger concerns about having the Steam community site get blocked is that there's a much more prescient fear that Steam itself will be banned in China.
Yeah,
which could this be the first step towards Steam getting outright banned? And this is something that people have been talking about for at least 6 months. Steam's precarious position in China has been a long developing story. One of the big milestones in this development has been Tencent announcing that it's changing its Tencent Games platform, TGP, into Wii Game.
Well, it was previously QQ Games, right? It started out as QQ Games.
It's been TGP for, I don't know how many years, for a while.
I mean, what, QQ Games was established in, I think, 2007? It was like a free-to-play client. And they, like, also partnered with AOL, apparently. That's like
bizarre,
way back when.
Bizarre partnership.
Right?
Yeah.
But
Tencent's long been the steward of online Chinese gaming. I mean
they
more
rebranded,
than anybody else.
Rebranded as Wii Game last year, and we're planning on trying to go international, which I don't think they can compete with Steam internationally. But with the way business goes in China, they can definitely hold a monopoly here and force Steam out of the ecosystem, basically.
This is kind of what China does in every industry. They just push out foreign competitors,
right?
Especially in the internet space,
so or buy them. But like, that's not going to happen with Valve.
It doesn't seem like there's much for them to gain.
Yeah.
When they announced Wii Game, they also announced that they would have exclusive distribution rights in China for Rocket League, and Tencent already has publishing rights for PUBG, for example.
Right.
NetEase is the publisher for Overwatch. So there are a couple big Chinese publishers. NetEase and Tencent are the two biggest ones, which are in an overwhelming position of power inside China. So,
it's like mind-boggling how much power they have.
They have more power in the gaming industry here than any other company has in any other market.
Right. I mean, they have like ties with the government and stuff, basically. They can just...
They really are like an appendage of the government at this point. I mean, the government has already long required that they put like central Communist Party members within the board of these companies.
Yeah.
So they already have, they're already inside them, clearly. But in any case, we really hope that Steam doesn't get blocked. And this has raised kind of a point of discussion inside China, which is, will people be gravitating from Steam onto Wii Game, especially as the most popular online game in China right now, aside from League of Legends, might be PUBG.
Right.
PUBG is a very popular game. Steam now has, I think, more users in China than in the United States.
The total user base... do you know what the total user base right now is? I think it's 150 million this year.
I'm not sure what the number is, but I know that the number of Chinese users in particular has skyrocketed in the last year.
Huge, just because of PUBG primarily.
Just because of PUBG, yeah.
I mean, there was a user base for CSGO, but I mean, that's like minuscule compared to the user base of PUBG. PUBG has been like a global phenomenon, especially in China, though. That's like, we've discussed our experiences of going into Wangba, the internet cafes.
Yeah, here. We recorded a previous podcast about PUBG in China, so check that out if you want to go into greater detail on that. But CSGO is another example of a game, a Western game, which was published in China to extreme success. That was published by Perfect World.
Yeah, and that you don't need the Perfect World version. You don't need to run Steam for, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we really hope the Steam doesn't get blocked. We'll get into that.
So today we're going to be talking about different gaming platforms than Steam, Wii Game, among others.
Right. So have you actually used Wii Game before?
No, I have seen someone using it at a internet cafe here. But the UI kind of reminds me of like just the way Overwatch looks, like similar color palette and stuff. It's all like kind of white and like clean looking and stylized icons and whatnot. And
Wii Game is primarily marketed just for the Chinese market.
Yeah,
so it tends to be a lot of games which don't are not of much interest to us or to you, if you're listening to this, probably.
I looked at the website for Wii Game. The prices are like dirt cheap, like maybe even cheaper than Steam Store prices. Like
a lot of the games are free to play.
Yeah, there's a lot of free to play games. I mean, like I said, QQ Games started out as a like free to play client, like all the games on there, and they've tried to transition to compete with Steam, but they still have a huge library of free to play games. So to cater to that market, to the Chinese market, they're trying to keep the price threshold like super low.
Free-to-play is the predominant business model which game developers in China use. So there are very few exceptions to that. One of those is PUBG, but that's like a pretty peculiar example. But yeah, now we see all these PUBG clones which are on mobile and on PC as well.
And they're all free-to-play.
They're all free-to-play.
Yeah.
None of them will even have the crazy notion to charge for the game up front just because most people will not pay for it. So PUBG is a kind of extreme example of people actually paying 100 RMB for a game.
Paying a large price for a game here compared to like the other games that would be like half that price maybe.
Or like 10 RMB.
Or yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
it's not uncommon to see like games for less than 20 RMB. When I was looking at the Wii Game platform, pretty much all of the games were priced around 10 to 18 RMB.
Right. So I think this brings us kind of conveniently into Steam, which is our platform of choice, the one which we're most knowledgeable on and which we use the most often. Steam has been expanding in China hugely, largely because of PUBG. But, you know, I do wonder if PUBG might be the game which gets Chinese users onto Steam and then makes them aware of all the other great titles which are available on Steam, many of which are localized into Simplified Chinese Now.
Yeah, I mean, like, Firewatch has Chinese. Like, so many games have been localized into Chinese. Over the last few years, it's become increasingly more common.
There's understandably a lot of interest from global developers in localizing the game into Simplified Chinese. And the reason why is because this user base on Steam is growing so quickly in China. It's now the largest in the world. What I've noticed anecdotally is that the vast majority of Chinese players, which I know on Steam, have probably like two games in their library.
Yeah, which like I don't know how many you have. I have like 635 in my library, excluding like the unredeemed keys I have in like my humble library or just sitting in my emails or like whatever. But I mean, we have massive libraries,
as a lot of Westerners do. You know,
I think we have massive libraries compared to a lot of Westerners. So
there are people in the CGF group,
like
I think,
Woody,
who have bigger libraries.
Woody's
than us.
The only one I think that has a larger library than us.
Well, yeah. So it seems that Chinese people, by and large, have PUBG and CS:GO and maybe nothing else. Many games.
When did you first get Steam, and what was the first game you got on Steam?
I got Steam with the first game that Half-Life required 2? Steam, which is Half-Life 2.
In 2003.
I think it was 2004. I think it was like August or summer of 2004.
I think it was summer of 2003 in September of 2003.
Well,
could have been 2004.
It could have been either of those. Yeah. I'm not sure, but I did get Steam with Half-Life 2. I mean, I got Half-Life 2 and Half-Life 2 forced you to get onto Steam, and that was kind of the beginning of Steam. Steam actually existed before Half-Life 2, but basically no one was using it.
Yeah, people kind of hated it before Half-Life 2. It was starting to
People hated it even during Half-Life 2. There was very vocal backlash against Steam, the requirement for it to be online.
But now there's like so many benefits to having it that it's great.
Half-Life 2 was released November 2004.
Okay.
But in any case, yeah, so that was kind of the beginning of Steam. That was when I first got into Steam. Actually, I didn't even keep track of my original Steam account. At some point, I lost it at some point.
Some point, I found mine and logged into it years later when I got a new computer. I had created a Steam account like way back when and been playing like Half-Life and Counter-Strike and whatnot at an internet cafe near my high school. And I didn't have... I didn't have a decent computer at home, so that's why I'd be playing at the internet cafe. And I guess I had got an account then and like set everything up. And then years later, when I got a new computer for my house, I was able to remember all my info and log in. And I had a library of maybe the whole original Half-Life and anthology and Half-Life 2 and all that stuff on there, which was cool to locate. These old games and have access to them still.
Yeah, so Steam's been running for a long time. There are a bunch of people on my friends list. I mean, maybe a
that
lot of
you
people
don't even know.
Any? No. I know them all because this Steam account is not 10 years old. But I have noticed that a lot of people have been on Steam for 10 years. They have the 10-year achievement badge.
Yeah.
In any case, Steam has a long history, longer history than I think than any of the platforms that we're going to be talking about today.
Oh, it's definitely got a longer history, by almost 10 years longer than pretty much anything we're going to discuss today.
Well,
it's 2003, because
yeah,
it came out before Half-Life 2.
With Counter-Strike, I think
yeah.
it was one of the first.
And pretty much everything else that we're going to discuss today is about around 2010 or so that everything came out. So almost 10 years, 7 to 10 years earlier than everything else we're going to discuss.
So what's unique about Steam? Why is Steam our preferred platform?
Well, Steam has a very large library, a lot of really good games. It has good DRM, management, it's good about syncing across computers, has cloud saves, broadcasting. The community features, as we discussed, are really nice. And there's great sales throughout the year that they make fun. If you're into metagaming and whatnot, they've got the Steam trading card achievements. And during sales, you can get badges and stuff to showcase your games. So really lets you showcase what type of gamer you are and broadcast that to people and have all your games organized in one spot and build a community around that.
It's really the only platform that has a successful social function around it. A lot of the other platforms, which we might mention in this podcast, like Uplay or EA Origin, have emulated a lot of the functionality of Steam.
But don't do it well.
Well, not only do they not do it well, it just feels vacant and empty and pointless in the same way that Google Plus does.
Yeah. I mean, there's active forums and whatnot that you can go in and post and have discussions with.
Extremely active. Yeah. Actually, I find that for a lot of the games which I've played on Steam, if I'm looking for information about the game on Google, I'll just be directed to a forum thread on the Steam community site, because there is in-depth discussion on a lot of these games. And it's almost like a lot of popular games have subreddits dedicated to them.
Right.
And they have some of them have hundreds or thousands or even more posts, which are just dedicated to going into, a great level of detail on these games.
Also, some games older games, maybe the devs aren't really helping with things, but you can go onto the threads and there'll be pinned topics on how to fixes for games that the devs haven't really done, and you can still be able to get through and play the games. We're playing The Evil Within right now, and there was a ton of tech help on the discussion forum on how to like fix like loading of textures so that like everything looks smooth and the load times are maybe like 25 to 50% faster. Like things like that. So
two of the features which I think are the best on Steam in my opinion are the ability to have a localized store. So we take great advantage of this in China. So we're on the Chinese Steam store.
When did
as
they
we've
start doing
about.
That? I mean, it was a US store basically for like a long time. I mean, it's maybe been like three to four years maybe that they've localized stores.
That sounds about right. About 3 or 4 years. So yeah. I've been on the Chinese store for maybe a year now or maybe a year and a half, 2 years, something like that.
Best decision ever.
Yeah, so...
And our library's fucking skyrocketed after going to that.
I'm sure we've spoken about this in the past, but for anyone who's unclear, if you are... If you can change the account region for your Steam account at any time, but you have to reside in that country. So because we live in China, we change our region to China. That allows us to purchase games using local currency, which is the Chinese renminbi. And it also adjusts the prices to localize them for whatever market you're in.
So they're like 50% cheaper than the US store.
Usually more than 50%. I mean, it depends on the game. Some games
50 to 75%.
Some games are not discounted much at all. One of those is Sonic Mania, which was cheaper on Switch, and that's why I bought it there. But most games are, between 50 and 80% cheaper on the Chinese store. So to give you an example, we both bought Civilization VI for about 200 something RMB, which is maybe $35. And so the full release was 60. So I guess that's just under 50%, but that'll give you an idea. Like, it's those kind of discounts. And what that'll often do is it'll change a $60 purchase into something that you can kind of rationalize.
Yeah.
So when Shadow of War came out, for example, I just bought it day one because it's like $30. And I was like, whatever, you know, no problem. $30 just doesn't feel like that much compared to $60.
Yeah, so $60, you're like, oh, damn.
Yeah, I'm going to really contemplate, like, is this a game that it's worth buying now?
Get closer to $100 or whatever, whereas $30 just is like... You know, like a night at a bar or something, going out for a couple beers and getting a dinner or something.
Right. And so the localized store is a big issue. And the other one is refunds. So
that's the best feature, I think, of Steam is their refund policy.
2 weeks after purchasing a game, if you've put in less than 2 hours of the game, you can request a refund. And I've never been denied one. So I think you can pretty much get a refund under any circumstances. It could be because you don't like the game or the game doesn't run well on your computer or you have some other issue and you decide you don't want the game and they will just credit your account for the amount that you paid and they will take the game out of your library. And this is a wonderful thing to have.
So it really makes purchasing the decision to purchase a game so much easier. And there have probably been countless games that I've purchased just thinking I'll try it and refund it. And then I never got around to it, but I've like bought hundreds of games, you know, but there have been times where I buy a game, check it out and decide I don't like it and just return it. And it makes the ability to do that makes like shopping for games so much more enjoyable.
Yeah, it really does. So that pretty much covers Steam. That is what we use most of the time. I wanted to quickly touch on some of these, console-specific platforms like the Nintendo eShop, Xbox Live, and the PlayStation PSN. Network called PSN. Yeah, exactly. Not a whole ton to say about these, but each console pretty much has its own online distribution platform. They pretty much all offer the same functionality.
Well, PSN has the streaming service now, right?
Yeah, it does.
And they have like access to a whole bunch of the old exclusive, like PlayStation exclusive titles that you can play, and you can pay like a subscription fee to have access to like all those old games, right?
Yes, but I don't think that works in China. To my knowledge, I don't think that's offered in China. So I don't think that that's really an option for anyone who's living here. But if you were living in the United States or in Europe, you can access that. I think it's like $10 a month.
It's not a bad value.
Well, I mean, I guess so. I mean, PlayStation Plus is a really great value.
PlayStation Plus is a great value.
Or if you subscribe to Xbox Live, you get basically the same thing. They give you a free game.
We've had all these old consoles. So paying $10 a month to access these games that we can, a lot of them we can emulate on our computer or whatever, I've already played for like, you know, a lot of time back in the day. So paying $10 a month isn't necessarily worthwhile for like someone who maybe hasn't played those games or like a younger gamer or something. It might be worthwhile, but
I guess so. But you're also just paying to rent them. You don't really own anything. I mean, as opposed to PlayStation Plus or Xbox Live, which gives you outright
free
games, which well, even if you
technically free, but yeah,
right. So another platform which does that is Humble Bundle. You know, so
the
Humble Bundle, yeah. So Humble Bundle Monthly is a part of Humble Bundle. This is another platform which is a major one to mention. There was recently some news. IGN acquired Humble Bundle,
right?
Which was kind of a concerning development.
Because Humble Bundle originally started out by a group of guys in 2000. Let me see, 2000.
In any case,
and it was like a small independent game studio, just like running the whole thing.
Right.
And now it's like a huge corporate entity that's well known for fucking shit up.
Kind of, yeah. IGN like does not have the best reputation in game journalism. It's known as like a highly corporate organization. Financial terms of the deal were not disclosed, so no one knows how much IGN paid to acquire Humble Bundle, but a major concern was that
they
Humble
made a
Bundle,
donation of $1 so that they could get all the games on Steam.
A major concern was that it would become corporate and it would change its kind of whole philosophy and ideology. That purchase went down a couple months ago, I think about 3 months ago. So it is good to know that so far I have not seen any signs of Humble Bundle going downhill.
Now, a big part of Humble Bundle is they've always donated money to charities and done these big charity cases. They've donated more than $100 million for 50 different charities.
Yeah, I read that. $106 million.
Yeah.
Pretty incredible. From over 10 million customers.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
That's very impressive. Also, of the acquisition... Humble Bundle said, "We chose IGN because they really understand our vision, share our passion for games, and believe in our mission to promote awesome digital content while helping charity." And that sounds like he was making that statement with like a gun to his head.
Yeah, right.
So it's I don't know, like if I buy that. So I mean, upon the purchase, you know, a lot of people were like, "Oh man, it looks." I don't know if I'll continue my subscription.
So far, it seemed okay.
Right. And they said, "I can't think of a better partner than IGN to help Humble Bundle continue our quest."
Yeah.
I'm like, really? I can think of a lot
like
of
better ones. Like a lot
ones.
Of partners.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So,
IGN's like not like probably on like the top of the list of people who you would think would not be a good partner for
pretty,
Humble
yeah,
Bundle.
Pretty high up that list. I think the only one higher might be GameSpot.
Yeah.
But in any case, Humble Bundle, there are actually a lot of components to the store. They have a store. They sell games outright in a similar way to Steam. They emulate a lot of the Steam features in the way that some other distribution platforms do. They have a cloud save. They have their own client.
Bundle has its own client now?
Yeah, I think it does.
I wasn't aware of that.
I believe it does. They also have regular seasonal sales and the same as the Steam sales.
Yeah. And
they were
doing weekly bundles for a while. I think they've stopped doing the like... weekly bundle, but they have regular bundles, like very regular bundles.
They do have bundles all the time. They often have several bundles going on at once in addition to the store.
Yeah, and they have the monthly subscription, which we have both been big fans of.
Right, so the way that works is you subscribe, I think, for $12 a month.
Yeah.
And you don't know which games you'll get, and it's usually between $120 and $200 worth of games at retail. So it's usually
about, be like one or two AAA titles, a few smaller like indie titles, and then there's always at least one exclusive title for the bundle that's either not released elsewhere or released exclusively on the Humble Monthly platform for a period of time. Like the Getting Over It was exclusive to Humble Monthly subscribers, I think, for a month or two before releasing on Steam.
Right, so some of the AAA games are like Dark Souls 3 was one not too long ago, Civilization 6 with a bunch of DLC.
This month, I think, right?
Right, so AAA games kind of like this. Not like super new games, but games
that's the hype
last couple years.
A lot of time. I mean, like the Civ 6 one is the kind of hype up for the upcoming Civ 6 DLC.
Yeah.
So a lot of times it'll tie in with upcoming releases or whatever.
But beyond the AAA games, they're excellent curators of indie games. So they frequently feature a lot of really good games that might otherwise be overlooked.
I mean, there are a number of different bundles out there, like Indie Gala or something like that. Like,
there's a ton of them.
Yeah, but
it's like Bundle Stars.
Yeah, but they're like pretty like mediocre bundles.
Pretty low quality.
Yeah,
I feel the same way.
But Humble Bundle are excellent curators.
Right.
Like, they have a really good taste in what games they include in their bundles.
It's a little bit similar to GOG. Have you used that much?
Use GOG a little bit. One cool new feature that got me interested in GOG probably, was it a year ago or something? GOG Connect, where like games in your Steam library can be tied to your GOG account, and you get access to the DRM free versions of the game, which GOG has been big on basically since its inception, and as well as any other bonus items GOG, you know, offers with the purchase of the game, such as artworks, soundtracks, things like that.
So for anyone who doesn't know, GOG is another distribution platform. They focus particularly on older games.
I mean, do you know what GOG stands for?
Good old games.
Yeah, it was founded in 2008 by CD Projekt, which is, you know, the people who do the Witcher series.
Based in Warsaw, I think, Poland. Yeah. Yeah. GOG delivers DRM-free video games. It's on Windows, OS X, and it's on Linux as well.
And they're great about like making sure these old games run well on modern systems, which is like a fantastic, like the only resource for doing that, basically.
A lot of the games on GOG you can also not find on other platforms, particularly games which are 20-plus years old. You have
stuff like Planescape Torment or like...
Jumping Jackrabbit.
Yeah, like Dungeon Keeper.
Like DOS games.
Yeah.
Like there's a huge selection of DOS games on GOG in particular. And because it's an entirely owned company by CD Projekt.
Yeah.
So they're a subsidiary of CD Projekt. And CD Projekt is one of the most well-respected, reputable developers in the entire gaming industry.
Yeah.
So they just have a huge amount of credibility. So although GOG has been living in the shadow, I think, of both Steam and Humble Bundle, it is a very high-quality store. It is highly respected. Yeah,
and it looks good. They also, not too long ago, released their own platform, similar to Client. They have their own client similar to I'm having so much trouble talking today, dude. Similar to Steam. And,
it's called GOG Galaxy.
Yeah, GOG Galaxy, which I have not used, but I'd like to check out. It offers features like in-game chat and all that, but still, everything's DRM-free.
Right.
Which it has been a mainstay of GOG's kind of philosophy since its inception.
Yep,
which
sure
I think is like really cool.
Yeah, it's
Humble
nice.
Humble and GOG have both been adamant about trying to maintain that philosophy.
It's really nice that all the games are DRM free as well. So for people who are serious about DRM free, you know, no digital rights management on their games, GOG is a great option for them to use.
I don't have huge qualms with it, especially since I purchase my games, you know, but occasionally I run into issues where it's just a pain in the ass.
It's also not a big issue for me, but I do understand that some people choose to use GOG over Steam just for this one reason.
Well, there are some games that I've had problems with, like where there's very strict DRM software in place.
Ubisoft games.
Yeah, well, where some titles have had games where you can only install to so many computers or something, and I'm like, fuck, I like have to buy this game again so I can play it. Or because I bought a new computer or something and I've already reached my max number of installs, or I can't play the game because I can't access the internet or something to be able to verify ownership of the game. So I can understand wanting to be DRM free. It is less hassle.
Mm-hmm.
But nowadays with most things like on Steam and everything, it's pretty simple and straightforward. But like you mentioned, Uplay, major pain in the ass.
Yeah, so I guess we'll mention those. These are the last PC platforms before we get onto the mobile ones.
Yeah.
But EA Origins and Ubisoft Uplay are two kind of proprietary distribution platforms. One is Electronic Arts and the other one is Ubisoft. These are obviously two of the largest developer publishers in the game industry.
They both popped on about the same time.
I think about the same time.
Should have around 2011, 2012.
Well, it was around the time that Steam started getting really big.
Yeah.
And Steam started really pointing towards a future where all PC games would be distributed through this one platform.
Right.
And I think that both of these companies felt very uncomfortable with that future, where Steam would be taking a cut of all transactions.
Yeah.
And they thought, well, if Steam can do it, we want to do it. So we want our own platform. And so what they started doing at that time was holding some of their biggest games from Steam and making them exclusive to their platforms.
Yeah, Crysis 2 was pulled from the store and then later reintroduced on the store. And EA issued a statement saying that it was due to some other things that weren't EA's fault. But I mean...
Nonsense.
Yeah, total nonsense, dude.
Another example is Mass Effect 3. So Mass Effect 1 and 2 are on Steam. Mass Effect
3 was exclusive on Origin, right?
That's right. Yeah. It's exclusive on Origin. A lot of people just skip the game. Not only because it's on Origin, but because the game's not that great. It kind of pales in comparison to the prior two Mass Effect games. Although it's probably looking great compared to the most recent Mass Effect game.
Yeah.
So there is that. But in general, yeah, Uplay and EA Origin. I have an account on both. I'm a fan of neither.
I have an account on Uplay. Just, I think I made one for Far Cry 3, Blood Dragon or something. And also to play From Dust, which is, what's his name? Eric Chahi? You know, another world creator.
I don't know.
Anyway, it's one of his newer games. And I had an account for that. Both of those games were a pain having to use Uplay within Steam.
Yeah.
And Uplay is known for eating up system memory and not performing as well.
It's pretty terribly made. It's just terribly made.
And then we spent a bunch of time on Rainbow Six Siege. Now, one thing that Uplay does that Steam does not do is it has the achievement system that Steam does, but you unlock credits with completing achievements so you can use to purchase in-game content.
Yeah, I don't like that.
It's kind of weird.
I think it's a way to make money. You know, it's a way to like draw people further in. It's not something I'm a fan of. They sell a lot of virtual items directly through Uplay in a way that Steam does not.
Yeah.
So that is one big difference.
Well, Steam does that with like CS:GO.
Yeah, but it's not like a major part of the platform in the way that Uplay is.
Right.
I feel like the Ubisoft games which are on Uplay. I mean, basically, Uplay is just for Ubisoft games.
Right.
First of all, no other developer. I don't even know if they can get on there or even if they would want to if they could. But in more modern Uplay games, they almost all have these types of purchases just jam-packed inside them. Like Rainbow Six Siege,
like
which is a fantastic
game. Like when
you put
it on the front page has like, right now, blah, 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 it's for sale. Like get these new skins for these characters, guns or things like that. And you're just like, fuck, I don't want to like boot up and have just like flash in my face, like buy items. You know?
It's not just the fact that these items are available. It's the fact that they so aggressively push these sales through Uplay and through Ubisoft games, which a lot of people find very off-putting.
Especially after you pay so much for a game. I mean, Rainbow Six Siege is not like, I mean, it's a $30-$40 game or something. Like it's not a cheap game. It's not an expensive game, but then they offer season passes on top of that, as well as in-game content, you know, and by season passes, most games that offer season passes are like, okay, this game is going to have a series of DLC come out and this will unlock all the DLC. And then a new game will come out. But Rainbow Six Siege is like every year. It's now onto its fourth year of season passes. You know, so it's like, what? You gotta like buy a game and then every year buy more stuff and then buy things in the game. I mean, you don't have to, but it's kind of whack. It's a lot to invest in a game.
Right. So that's EA Origins and Uplay.
Yeah.
So moving on, we just have mobile platforms remaining. We wanted to talk about App Store and the iOS App Store and Google Play.
Yeah.
And the last most interesting platform, I think, which is just emerging. So we'll get to that in just a second. The first one is the App Store. The App Store is
excellent.
Is just outstanding. Really fantastic. It just seems to get better over time. The App Store has obviously had a transformative effect, not just on the gaming industry, but on software development and distribution in particular.
Yeah.
The App Store, and I really have...
It's huge.
Well, I've witnessed this very closely because I started first working in the game industry when the App Store came out. And at that time, there were a lot of developers around the world, including in China, which were just getting into developing apps for the iPhone because the software development kit for the iPhone had just been released in 2009 or early 2010, around that time.
And I think you were starting to work in the industry in 2008, right? Or is it 2009?
No, it was actually right at the beginning of iOS development. Yeah, so it was in 2009 that I first started working on it. And there were millions of people all around the world who were doing the same thing. Many people in China were doing the same thing. Actually, a lot of people in the game industry had a similar entry point as I did.
Right.
So the app stores had a huge effect on that. It's really democratized software development. So
yeah,
Apple really made tools available to a global audience. And we've seen this interesting distributive effect where there are game developers all around the world now. And yeah, so the App Store has kind of led the way of that. And now there's an App Store on everything. Everything has an App Store now. PlayStation and Xbox.
Yeah.
You know, Macs have an App Store. Windows has an App Store. Like
Windows App Store is terrible.
Right. Everything has an App Store. Yeah, that's one we didn't even like think to even mention.
Yeah,
like,
dude, it's so bad. It's such a pain to use.
Right. So the App Store is one of the largest software distribution platforms on the planet. It was recently redesigned with iOS 11.
Yeah, and that cool new feature of the Today in the App Store, where it's kind of got like a mini zine about like things going on in the App Store.
Exactly. Yeah, mini zine is a good way to describe it. Yeah. Today, I shared a screenshot in the CGF group, which was about Goat Simulator.
Oh, yeah.
So they had like a really awesome photo session with the developer of Goat Simulator, like him holding goats.
And it's a good way to kind of promote the games and give you some like more personal information on games or software, get you interested in it while like giving them a spotlight, you know?
It's essentially background information on developers and the development process.
Yeah.
And so they talk about, you know, how he got the idea of making Goat Simulator and kind of what it's like. And there might be a video trailer for the game in the kind of short blog post and then a link to the app. And every day it's updated. And it's just a fantastic way to find really some of the best stuff in the App Store. And obviously because
and it's kind of fun. It's just entertaining to scroll through, you know, what's going on that day.
Because the App Store is so large, a lot of the great stuff just gets overlooked. And so this Today page has kind of taken a step towards a solution to that problem by surfacing some really fantastic stuff, which people might otherwise not be able to find. And along with the redesign also came two other pages, one for games and one for apps. And so Apple, acknowledging that games are by far the largest category of apps inside the App Store, have dedicated a lot of attention towards curating games.
Which I think is important because there is like also a ton of shit on there, you know, and so like,
you never find it.
Yeah, but there's so many things that it's easy to have like one good title lost like amongst everything without like having curation like this, which I think is important. So that's like really cool. And I think that's something that the Google Play Store is not doing. Like the Google Play Store is pretty bare bones.
Yeah, the Google Play Store is definitely falling behind the iOS App Store. It's been a while since I've owned an Android device, over a year, but I use Google Play pretty regularly through an Android device, which I use for work. And so I was familiar with, you know, how Google Play works, but I much prefer the way that the App Store works. So those are two platforms you use, whether you have an iPhone or an Android phone. So you're probably familiar with those. One last thing to mention about iOS 11 in particular is that Apple included in iOS 11 a technology called ARKit, which gives developer tools to developers to create augmented reality applications. And so since iOS 11 was released, hundreds and hundreds of AR apps have been developed and are in the App Store now. And Apple's done a great job of curating those apps and making augmented reality sections on the App Store.
That's cool.
So if you look at the game's homepage on the App Store, you'll definitely see like a great AR games collection. And then you'll find maybe 10 or 15 apps which use augmented reality to really fantastic effect.
Yeah.
And it's a great way for them to, Apple has the unique power to do this. So they can release a new iOS iteration and they can include some developer tools and they'll know that everyone's using an iPhone. So all these applications will work on modern iPhones. Whereas Google Play has a, you know, cannot really do that because there's so much variation in the hardware that people are using.
Right.
And augmented reality, huge, you know, really is very exciting. You know, I mean, if you play some of these really industry leading AR games, which you'll find in the App Store, they're really cool, innovative, interesting experiences. And recently, one of these was shared in the CGF group, which was really cool. It was like a shooting game.
Oh, yeah.
So you use augmented reality and the gyroscope to move the phone around, and you're shooting things on the real life backdrop.
Yeah, which is cool.
Using the camera. Yeah, pretty neat. So if you have an iPhone or if you have an iPad, you can find augmented reality apps in the App Store. You need iOS 11 to do that,
right.
But it's pretty fantastic and pretty cool and unique to iPhone for now.
Yeah.
There's one other thing I wanted to touch upon that I forgot to bring up a little bit earlier, but regarding Steam, this last year, Steam had a major shift in direction and shut out. They canceled the Steam Greenlight and implemented Steam Direct.
Right.
Where you pay a $100 fee to get your game on the store and no longer go through the Greenlight process. And yeah. I just wanted to hear what you think about that and about whether or not you think it's an improvement for the platform.
It's hard for me to say if it's an improvement for the platform, but I don't necessarily think it's a bad idea. Yeah. I've heard a lot of people say that this $100 roadblock is going to prevent some people from getting onto the store.
Well, it could also allow for a ton of people to just easily put shit games on there. And I've seen some like pretty bad ones pop up just on some YouTube channels and stuff where people have been exploring, where it's like basically just like bare bones, like Unity assets purchased from like a store, no custom content or anything, doing like a bare bones like game and then just putting it on the store.
Yeah, my first take is that if $100 is an issue for you publishing a game, you probably shouldn't be developing a game to begin with. If you can't recoup $100, then your game probably sucks.
Yeah.
And maybe it's not adding that much value to the store to begin with.
Yeah.
I also think that Steam has added 7,000 games in the last year alone.
Nuts.
So that's more games added in the last year than I think from 2008 until 2015.
Yeah.
Something like that. So the number of games that are getting released on Steam is immense. And
I also I never really used Steam Greenlight. Did you ever use it?
I used it, yeah.
I like maybe once or twice explored through it, but like didn't find it incredibly interesting. And there was plenty of games to like just find already released on Steam without having to look for games to greenlight.
I have the feeling that Valve knows what they're doing. So if Valve thinks this is the best thing for them to do, I think that they're probably right. So I just trust their judgment on this.
Cool.
So getting past PC platforms, the last ones is just about WeChat, actually. So it's WeChat mini programs. For those of us who are living in China, we use WeChat probably 100 times a day. That might be a conservative estimate.
Yeah.
WeChat is pretty much dominates the mobile landscape inside China. You use WeChat to pay your phone bill, use it to pay for vegetables, pay for groceries, use it to pay for taxis. I mean, like, noodles. I mean, everything. Literally everything you buy in China, you can use WeChat just for that. And it's become so convenient and so prevalent that pretty much no one uses cash.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I
think you last year, maybe 2 years ago, did an experiment where you wanted to see how long you could go without using cash.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you went you went several days without using any cash.
It's not even remotely challenging at this point. Literally,
it's only gotten easier as time's gone on. Like, it's got more and more ways to use WeChat to pay for things and you utilize different services.
Right.
You can pay your phone bill, pay your internet bill. You can pay for movies, whatever.
I went to a furniture market last weekend and I saw this old store which sells these old vinyl records, like communist era, like 1960, like China opera records. Everything's like super dusty. He has like CRT TVs from like 1985.
Nice.
And like all this super old stuff. It's like a 70-year-old guy who's selling this. And he, amidst all this old stuff, there's a WeChat QR code on the wall.
Of course.
And it's like, scan that to pay. Yeah. I mean, even like 70-year-old vendors who are selling things which are like antiques will still accept WeChat just because it's reached that level of widespread use where
I don't think we have anything like that in the States.
No, we certainly do not.
Yeah.
And actually, a lot of Chinese people look at the States and look at Europe and they're like, you guys are so far behind.
Yeah. In that area, in that regard, we absolutely are.
Right. So, in any case, WeChat has recently begun promoting games, which are being distributed.
They implemented the use of mini programs. And within that, the mini program. I mean, because games have been a part of WeChat for a couple of years, but it's not been a major component.
Yeah, not really.
It's nothing that people use, but in the mini programs, it's been huge.
Well, it's been about a month or so.
Yeah.
That people have been really using these mini programs a lot.
I mean, like, there are mini programs for everything from Jindong to like Ulama. Like, you can order food, you can order shoes, you can, do all kinds of things, pay for mobikes and stuff, but like a big part of it is games. And I think it's reaching a whole new user base that wouldn't normally be reached. But like people wouldn't go to the trouble of going in the app store and searching for games or something, but maybe their friend sends them a high score in WeChat and they can immediately access and play the game within WeChat without having to search or download anything.
It's almost similar to games as they were in Facebook. So yeah. In like the Farmville era on Facebook, you would be on Facebook to chat with other people and you would have some kind of prompt or notification for a game. Like,
do people still play
come
games
water
on
my
Facebook?
Cups. No, Facebook explicitly killed games. That's why Zynga went nosedived.
Zynga is what?
Zynga used to be one of the largest, most influential game companies in the world. Do you remember that?
Nope.
Okay, they were. And now they're not. And the big turning point was when Facebook said, we don't want to be a platform for garbage games.
Okay.
So it's a little bit like that in the sense that in a social context now, people are being introduced to games through WeChat. And that has a much stickier effect.
Yeah, like so, I told you, my girlfriend doesn't really like games at all. But she just won't touch them. She won't hang out and watch them or anything. Doesn't like the social aspect of them, but then as soon as like some that jumping game got popular, she's playing a ton with her friends. There's a quiz game on there that she plays like daily.
The jump game is like the big one. That's like the smash hit of WeChat games so far. The game was just announced not too long ago. It's actually a clone of a bottle flip game, which is developed by Ketchup.
Yeah. I think a few years ago.
Well, they developed 2049. Do you ever play that?
2049, that's on Steam, right?
No, it's a mobile game.
Mobile game named 2049.
Right. So here's, I think it's 2048 maybe?
Oh.
In any case, the story is quite interesting. So there's a very successful Apple Design Award winning mobile game, which is called Threes. It's a strategy game. It's like a puzzle game, puzzle strategy game. And that game came out and got all kinds of accolades.
Right.
And the game was a premium game, which was for sale for maybe like $3 or $4.
Yeah.
The game was cloned by another developer, and they called it 2048. And 2048 was free.
Yeah.
So there's a free version of this game, which is basically identical to Threes, right? They just ripped it off, okay? When they ripped it off, 2048 just went to the top of the free charts and was getting downloaded like tens of millions of times.
And that was Ketchup.
That was Ketchup who developed that game. Yes.
The clone.
That's correct. 2048 is the clone.
And then they made a bottle flip game, and now Tencent has ripped them off.
Exactly.
But this is a company that's known, that got well known for doing that, or for cloning another game.
That's right. So the company which cloned Threes has now been cloned by WeChat. Yeah. And now this WeChat jump game is like one of the biggest games in China. I don't think it's really gaining any revenue. There's nothing to buy inside the game, but the game is being played by so many people.
Ads or anything. So.
Right.
But it was developed by Tencent, right? So, I mean, it's more or less like something to kind of show what the platform's capable of, I think.
It seems like that's the purpose. Yeah. The game looks great. It performs just as an app you would download in the App Store.
Yeah.
And it's really making a strong argument for games and other apps just being distributed through WeChat.
Yeah, you don't have to download anything extra. You don't have to... I mean, there's the social aspects of it. You said you were watching this girl's game the other day.
Hika, yes.
Yeah.
What up? Yeah. So the way that it works basically is once you play the game, you play as long as you can. You're trying to jump to platforms and you get a point for each platform that you jump on. You're trying to jump for as long as you can without falling. And once you complete your run, then you can see a leaderboard and it'll show all your friends.
Yeah.
In your contacts, and you can see their score and you can see where you rank among that list.
Which is getting really high since when the game was first released, I think scores were in the 300 to 400 range. Now you're seeing people close to breaking 1,000.
I haven't seen anything close to that. I've seen 700 at the highest. Hika has 400 and something, 440, which
God
is
damn.
Unbelievable
yeah.
to me. My high score is like 105.
My score is 185.
You know, but I did learn just yesterday some tips that I didn't know, so I feel confident.
Did you know about the perfect consecutive perfect jumps?
Yes.
Is there anything else? What kind of tips? What kind of jump tips you got?
I'll let you know after I beat your score.
Damn it.
Yeah. How you like that?
I don't like it, obviously.
The game is really good, though. There's a lot of competition on WeChat among people to see who can win. You can also see leaderboards for groups. So
how do you see leaderboards for groups? I haven't figured that out yet.
There's a link for it.
All right.
So if you can also watch people play live.
That's a pretty cool feature. Like the equivalent of broadcasting on Steam or Twitch or something now available within WeChat.
There's just a whole lot to say about WeChat mini programs. This could easily be its own podcast.
Yeah.
Just comparing this to the App Store. And as we move further into 2018 and WeChat distributes more games through WeChat, it seems inevitable that they're eventually going to be either selling games outright or they're going to be selling in-app purchases.
Right. I think in-app purchases is probably the most likely thing.
I believe that might be a violation of the App Store, though. I think that Apple is getting into something of a conundrum because it can't shut down WeChat because it's too popular. But if it also lets WeChat develop